Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Redford Township and earned a political sciences degree from the University of Michigan. A self-confessed video game addict, he now makes a living as an ADHD coach/consultant. He is the curriculum developer of the Empowered Project, a strength-based self-awareness guidance program for young adults between 16 and 29 with ADHD. His name, Kevin Roberts. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Kevin Roberts, the curriculum developer and board member of the Empowered Project. Kevin, welcome. An honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack, and it's really an honor to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom?
Well, Jack, I sort of had somewhat of an atypical childhood. My mother lost her first husband, who was an Air Force pilot whose plane crashed, and so she had four children and then got married again, and I came from that marriage along with my younger brother, David. And so once that marriage fell apart, you know, there wasn't a lot of powerful male energy in that house. And so essentially my mother raised five kids on her own. And she, our lives were revolved around church and community. And one of the things that my mother always inculcated into us was that you get more out of life when you help other people. And I suppose that's the lesson that still lives within me, that Mom taught us.
Mom's still alive?
Mom is still alive. She's been in the choir, I don't know, 50 years. She's a pillar of her church. You know, Mom believes in helping people so much that she often gives away more money than she has to other people.
You went to Catholic Central.
Yeah, I did.
And there's a fraternity there. They say about Notre Dame, you don't graduate from Notre Dame, you become Notre Dame.
Yep.
And I get the sense it's the same way with Catholic Central. Why is that?
You know, Jack, I can't talk about it in general terms, but what I can say is that for the first 8 years of my education, I was incredibly bored and out of touch. I was a copier, a slacker, a liar, all across the board. My first 8 years of schooling would have been a great training ground for an espionage agent, CIA agent, because deception was the name of the game. But when I got to Catholic Central, I encountered three priests who changed my life. Father Ned Donaher, you never knew what was going to happen in his theology class, made school incredibly fun, never wanted to miss it. Father Jack Menner, if General George Patton had gone into Algebra 1 teaching, he would have been very much like Jack Menner. It was like math boot camp. You were alive and spinning in that class. Father John Wheeler, French. You didn't do your homework? Guess what? 50 push-ups. You didn't learn grammar, you practiced language. It was a hands-on experience. These three men combined to take a kid who was totally disengaged from school and plug him in totally. That ninth grade year transformed my life. Now, for me, I feel an enduring sense of gratitude. Father Donaher's in a nursing home in Toledo, 87 years old, still going strong. I still visit the man. These three men changed my life. So, yeah, it's a fraternity because I think it's an institution that has the capacity to transform lives.
You earned a political sciences degree from the University of Michigan.
I did.
And you're proficient in multiple foreign languages. How did that come about?
You know, Jack, people ask me that a lot, and I know you're a big sports fan. Do you have to try to be a big sports fan? No. It comes naturally to you, doesn't it?
Yes.
This is a God-given thing. It's just when I was a little boy, if I heard a foreign accent, my mother would grab my hand and hold on tightly because I would veer off and follow those people. There was a family in our neighborhood, the Abrahams, who owned a party store. They were from Lebanon, and I went up there and learned as much Arabic from them as I could possibly learn, many of which was not the nicest, but still I learned. It's just something that I love.
You're a self-confessed video game addict.
I am.
Couple of facts. Annual U.S. retail sales of video games are expected to exceed over $30 billion.
Yep.
And the average American child spends 44 hours per week in front of a screen.
That is correct.
Talk to us about video games.
Well, boy, Jack, I wish we had about 12 hours because that's kind of what we'd need. And as you know, I wrote a book on this subject that's called Cyber Junkie, Escape the Video Game and Internet Trap. That'll be out this fall with Hazelden Publishing. Let's start from a societal shift perspective. Society is transforming. When you and I were kids, if we wanted to indulge in recreation, we often played sports. We'd do pickup games. We'd get kids and we'd go to the park and we'd play baseball or we'd play football. Kids don't need to do that anymore. The world of recreation has changed. All you need to do is sit in front of your computer screen, and you've got access to millions of people, millions of possible opponents all around the world. And so that's a wonderful thing. It's increasing the global nature of society. But some people have brains that put them at risk because they can't game responsibly. They can't use the internet responsibly. They use it to excess, and it ends up tearing them away from real-world contacts. Instead of getting adventure in the real world, they pursue it in the cyber world to great excess. So it puts these people at risk for, at the very least, compulsive and excessive behavior, maybe even addiction. Behavior that destroys their potential for later in life.
If there's a listener that says, my two teenage sons... I don't know that they spend 44 hours a week, but they spend a lot of hours in front of that tube. How does someone know whether the person is a video game addict or just plays a lot?
Well, I think there are a few key things that you need to pay attention to. Number one, does the loved one in your life play video games or use the internet or use the computer to the exclusion of developing other social contacts in his or her life? Has he or she turned away from other activities that once he or she derived great satisfaction from? Anything over more than 2 hours a day, we start to wonder, well, maybe there's some excess going on here. Are there physical complaints, loss of sleep, perhaps carpal tunnel syndrome, backaches, turning away from family? These are some of the things that we're looking for. And really, there are things that are similar to other addictions as well.
We're talking to Kevin Roberts, and I'm Jack Rasula. When we come back, we'll ask him, why are these games so addictive? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Kevin Roberts. Kevin, for instance, World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
You say that's an extremely enticing, addictive video game. Why?
Well, World of Warcraft belongs to a category of video game called massively multiplayer online role-playing games. This game combines a lot of features. Number one, You can play with, there are millions of people all around the world with whom you can play. It has a social quality because most people don't play alone. They end up becoming part of a clan or what's known as a guild. And they go on at the same time every night and they play together. They might raid a certain territory. They might raid Trollor's dungeon. And they're doing this cooperatively. They have headsets on. They're talking to each other. Now, let's take people that have social skill issues. They don't work and develop real-world, real-time relationships with people. But They have this online family with whom they game every night. Perhaps they game for 15 to 20 hours a week with these people. Well, that's a lot more time than most people spend on their friendships. Imagine spending 20 hours with one person or a group of people every week. That would really get you plugged in. So there's a social aspect to it. Number two, there's an adventure. You're in a fantasy land. And so if you have problems in your life that you're avoiding or you're escaping, what better place to go than this fantasy land where you're in complete control and you can do things that you never even dreamed of in your real life? So there you go. You've got an opportunity for socialization, especially if you're somebody who lacks that in your real life. You've got an opportunity for escape, and overall, there's a lot of avoidance in that. People get really plugged into this. Now, another thing about this game is that it has limitless potential for rewards. So if I play enough, I might get a new set of armor for my avatar, my character. I might get this great double-handed axe that I've been coveting that will allow me to more effectively raid the dungeons. And what happens is that as you play the game, the rewards that you get, the armor, the upgrades, they become less frequent. And so you have to play longer and longer and longer to get a reward. And you never know when the reward is coming. Well, psychologists will tell you that this is the most powerful situation to get embedded into the reward circuitry of the brain. And so these factors combine to make it incredibly intense. And people get so plugged in that they turn away from a lot of other important things in their lives.
All right, Kevin, you say that they play every day. They play with the same group of people around the world. When we were kids, every day in the summer, I went to the park, pick up games with the same kids. In the fall after school, football, same kids. Hockey in the winter, in the park. Spring, we played basketball, same kids. What's the difference?
Well, when you were sort of dependent on those kids, weren't you? Because if you had 11 people, well, you might have needed a 12th kid, and so you had to entice somebody. There may have been an argument during one of those football or baseball games about a call. Maybe somebody was out of bounds and there was an argument about it.
It was every play there was an argument.
Right, and we had the do-over, or redo. So you had to work, in real time, you had to work out those disagreements. Well, online, it's a lot easier to just, you don't have to work through those interpersonal difficulties. People become their avatar. And so they turn away and lose the ability for conflict resolution, simply dealing with people. There are some very important things that are lost when you don't have this real world, real time interaction. What are they going to do when they go to a job? I mean, they're going to be great if they can talk to everybody through a headset, you know, from the privacy of their own room. But when they have to be with people one on one, some problems can arise.
You talk about that we've got to teach these kids to interact with real people.
Right.
Can you expound on that?
Well, what we find is that when we do surveys of people who become excessive, let's take World of Warcrafters or any game, a lot of times you're dealing with people who already have social issues. They might not fit in at school. They might not have a lot of friends anyway. They might not know how to interact with people. And so people that have pre-existing socialization issues are drawn to this medium because it's safe. It's disconnected from the real world. So if you take people with this predisposition and then they put themselves into the cyber world, they're not dealing with those issues, those socialization issues. They're just avoiding them. It doesn't mean everybody that plays World of Warcraft has these kinds of issues, but it means that those types of people are drawn to this sort of medium, not just World of Warcraft, but many, many games, whether it's Xbox Live or what have you.
We're talking to Kevin Roberts. Kevin, if I'm a video game addict, how do I get free? I'm powerless to escape from this addiction.
Well, Jack, of course, that's a pretty good buzzword there for any person who's struggled with addiction. And yeah, at some point, when a compulsive behavior becomes an addiction, one of the defining features is that it becomes embedded in the reward circuitry of the brain, meaning that the person feels that he or she needs that behavior, needs that video game time to function. Look, the first thing with any addiction is to admit that you have a problem and admit that you're perhaps you're powerless over it and that you need help. So that could be talking to a loved one. It could be going to a therapist. It could be going online and finding there are some online support groups. There are a variety of options. But the main thing is that you need to reach out to real people to get support.
As I listen to you, I keep hearing the word fear. Fear is false expectations appearing real. 88% of what we worry about never happens to us, but fear is paralyzing. If somebody's paralyzed by fear, what does he or she do?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And I suppose there's no one answer. But, you know, and I may get, you know, go a little spiritual here on you, but for me, fear is the absence of love. And so the best remedy for fear is the same thing that I just said. Reach out. Reach out for support. Find some help. Connect with other people. That's the crucial thing. Because when you get somebody who's an addict, an addict turns away from family and friends. That's one of the defining features of addiction. Has that person turned away from family and friends, from relationships from which that person once derived satisfaction and support? Those relationships need to be reestablished. That person needs to be reconnected with the important people in life.
It's one thing if the person wants to change. Very tough for the parent to get the child to change or the young adult. What advice do you say to parents?
Well, that's a very broad question. And the first thing I would say is that it's important for parents of younger children to acquaint themselves and continue to acquaint themselves, because technology changes so fast and frequently, with the internet, the offerings of the internet, with the video game world. You know, listen, there's a great maxim, if you can't beat them, join them. Video gaming and internet-based activities represent a tremendous share of recreation for today's young people. Parents need to be up on that. Otherwise, they're blind to a very important part of youth culture. So for the younger children, figure out what's going on. You're never going to be able, I think, to totally restrict and prohibit your child from access to video games and computers. Those two things are ubiquitous. So what can you do? You can start out with your young children by having talks with them, by acquainting them with the possible dangers, and by teaching them to use those tools responsibly. And there are a variety of ways that you can do that. One of them, there's behavior modification. Oh, your kid's playing too much? Well, make doing some chores around the house a requirement in order to get video game time or computer time. Don't just let your child have unfettered access to electronics. Let your child know that these are privileges, because for most of today's children, they see cell phones, computers, video game systems, electronics as rights, not as privileges. And let us keep in mind that this present generation is one that sociologists call the entitlement generation. We got to break that.
We're talking to Kevin Roberts, who makes a living today as an ADHD coach/consultant. When we come back, we'll ask him, what is ADHD? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Kevin Roberts. Kevin, what is ADHD?
Well, Jack, I was at a friend of mine's house last Friday, and we were playing a friendly game of poker, about 10 guys. And when everybody learned what I did, I got several questions that I always get. Is ADHD real? Is this a real thing? There seems, you know, so let me address that. If I told you I had diabetes, you wouldn't presume to be an expert on the endocrine system. If I told you that my brother had schizophrenia, you wouldn't presume to be an expert in mental illness. But when it comes to ADHD, everybody thinks they know what parents of ADHDers should do. And what they don't know is how complex of a condition it is. First of all, let me tell you that attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a condition that is measurable and definable. Now, while we can't look at a brain scan and tell you that somebody's necessarily ADHD, we do know that in an ADHDer, certain regions of the brain, namely the prefrontal cortex and the striatal regions, are typically underactive in ADHDers. And without going into a lot of theory, what that means is that in the ADHD brain, the normal mundane rhythms and routines of life do not activate the brain to a significant enough extent for responsibilities to be carried out on a reliable basis. So ADHDers need greater stimulation to do activities that other people can just do normally. So for instance, novelty is something that creates a lot of stimulation. So you'll find that an ADHDer at the beginning of a school semester will be doing great for 3 or 4 weeks. Once the novelty wears off, that prefrontal cortex no longer is getting enough stimulation. The levels of the brain activity go down for a variety of reasons, and lo and behold, you're back to where you started from. The ADHDer is not keeping track of assignments, not writing things down, homework's not getting turned in, et cetera, et cetera. ADHD is a condition of the brain, and it's definable. There are genetic components to it, and if we look at the brains of ADHDers, the research is piling up that there are differences in the brain structure and in the functioning of the brain.
Kevin Roberts, you say that ADHDers, quote, we know what to do, we don't do what we know. Expound.
Well, first of all, that line I got from a great psychologist in this area. Her name is Fran Parker. And I think Fran actually got it from Russell Barkley. So I can't take credit for that, but it's a line that I like to use. We're, as you know, I'm involved in this project, in this Empowered project, and we work on that very assumption. Because if helping ADHDers succeed and access their immense talents were a function of simply transmitting information, the problem would be very easy. But you see, it's not that we don't have enough information. The ADHD brain can take in that information, but we're not very good at making changes because we're good at the beginning, like, oh yeah, this is great, I'm really going to change, this is a new semester, I'm really going to change. But the problem is, we don't have enough of certain neurotransmitters to keep our brains going once the novelty and excitement wears off. We're really good in crisis, we're really good in excitement, but we're not really good once things become rote, routine, and repetitive. So to get ADHDers to make change, to get them to do what they know, what Empowered is doing is creating a community of support. We believe that by creating a community of connected individuals who mutually support and challenge each other, that we can go from just doing, knowing what they do, to then reliably and consistently doing what they know.
How do we learn more about the Empowered Project?
Well, you can go to empowered.org, which is empowered.org. We're also on Facebook. If you put in Empowered, empowered into Facebook, we're in there, Empowered Project. Or you can call our number, 248-420-1590, 248-420-1590. Those are some of the ways. We'd love to talk to anybody who's struggling with ADHD or anybody in the community who wants to help, because what we're trying to this Empowered Project is a cutting edge technology. We are trying to do something that we don't think has really been done before, and we want to get people in, plug them into the community, and then we're also plugging them into resources within the community that can continue the work that we begin.
There's probably a lot of parents tonight that say, wow, you are speaking my language. I'm just so frustrated. I love my son. I love my daughter. But how do I reach my son, my daughter? How do I help them? I want to help them.
Well, Jack, one of the things that's when we talk about school, that's where a lot of parents have conflict with the ADHD or in their lives. And what I would say first and foremost is that it is of paramount importance that parents preserve the relationship they have with the ADHD or in their lives. Because what ends up happening is parents who perhaps don't have ADHD, or even if they do, they try to bombard, or then not they try, they bombard the ADHD in their lives with their coping strategies, with their thought processes, with assumptions based on how their brains work. And those assumptions and those beliefs do not always extrapolate to ADHD. So what ends up happening is parents get frustrated, they get angry, they can get very negative. I have a chapter in my book that will be coming out in 2011 called ADHD for Fun. I have a chapter called The World is Falling Apart. And that's a mindset that parents of ADHD kids often have. So the first thing you have to do is unplug a little bit from the process so that you preserve the relationship. Because the relationship between parent and ADHD child spirals into negativity so quickly that it can irreparably damage that bond for life. So preserve that connection, because most often when you're arguing and nagging and yelling about school, it's not changing the situation anyway. So unplug. Now, the second thing is, there was a great episode of the Seinfeld show called The Opposite. And George Costanza decides that since his life isn't working out, he's going to do the opposite of every impulse he's ever had. And he does, and his life works out for a short time until he goes back to his old ways. But that is a very important episode, because when you have an ADHDer in your life, the opposite of your impulse is probably the correct and most effective choice. So think about that. And I have a whole workshop based on The Opposite, by the way, so we don't have enough time to go into that right now. But consider that what you're doing, if it's not working, maybe the opposite of what you're doing would be better.
We're talking to Kevin Roberts, and I quote, "I am an adult who has been both gifted and challenged with ADHD." And I'm Jack Crisola, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything is possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Kevin Roberts, the curriculum developer and board member of the Empowered Project. Kevin, a lot of young adults, teenagers, total lack of self-esteem. You used a phrase over lunch a few weeks ago. They're socially impaired. How do we get self-esteem?
Now, you want me to frame that with just ADHD, or are we talking in broad terms now?
Either way.
Jack, when I was a boy, I didn't grow up with my father. And I was really lucky, because I met a guy named Tim Kowalski. And Tim Kowalski is, he's now a executive with the Boys and Girls Club of Southeastern Michigan, but he was a club director. And Tim saw a promise in me from a very young age, and he took me under his wing. And one of the things that Tim always had me do was he would ask me to help him. And when I was 10, he wanted me to help the 7-year-olds. And when I was 15, he wanted me to help the middle schoolers. And he got me to have a homework club to help kids in middle school when I was, I think, 16. And then he saw my facility with language, so he wanted me to have a language club. And I never knew what Tim was doing. But Tim was methodically building my self-esteem by showing me the power of helping other people. And I think one of the greatest tools of helping others, one of the greatest tools to build self-esteem, is to find a way to help other people. Now, I run study groups for ADHD folks. And you know the kids that end up going farthest with me? The ones who, after they've been with me for a year and a half, start helping other kids learn the lessons that they did. So if you are, if you're a kid with low self-esteem or your child has low self-esteem, find some people who need your help and offer your support. No better way to feel better about you. No better way to feel good about yourself and to become empowered.
Kevin Roberts, you're being a little modest here. You were actually the Boys and Girls Club Kid of the Year for Michigan State one year.
So. I was, 1987.
What's the single biggest thing you would say to parents tonight?
Well, Jack, boy, I would say a lot of things, and Lord knows I can talk. I think that the most important thing, given my work and my experience, is that when you're, as you parent your child, take great stock and figure out how your child's brain works and pay close attention to find out what your child has passion for. Don't push your child into doing and living the life that you want for him or her, but rather take extraordinary care to pay attention to the details, the little details, to see what your child is interested in, and then find a way to get your child to develop and grow. And maybe you're not the right mentor for your child. Find somebody who can help your child. What, if your child is a computer adept and you have no clues about computers, well, you got to find somebody who does, who can usher your child down the right path. It takes many adults to raise a child. I have a book that I have notes for that maybe will be coming out in a couple years, and it's called My Mentors. And you know, I'm at 26 and still counting. And I think, boy, if I hadn't had one of those, what would have happened to me? So get your child plugged in to the right people for his or her skill set. And be open to the fact that your child's brain may function very differently than yours.
Kevin Roberts, talk to us about consequences, not criticism.
Well, that's a big point for me, Jack, because I deal by and large with ADHDers and with people who have trouble with the internet and video gaming. And the problem is, when you have a child who's not living up to his or her responsibilities, what role do most parents fall into? Nagging. Now, you know, God love them, most of the parents that bring their kids to me, it's the mother that usually brings the kid to me, and it's the mother who usually senses that there's a problem. Moms can fall into that nagging role, and the trouble is, it doesn't usually produce the changes that are desired, and it poisons the relationship. So step out of that negativity cycle and come up with some creative consequences for the behavior and stick to them. And if you've got issues that are having you get angry, that are having you get negative, that are having you consistently blow up with your child, do your own work. You may need to see a therapist. You may need to have a friend that you call every day to check yourself so that you're not putting your issues, your anger, your negativity onto your child. So one of the great buttresses of this wisdom is that you have to logically think through all the consequences and simply, dispassionately, put those consequences on your child. Don't yell. Don't nag. And I think you'll be amazed at the results.
Can you share with us, Kevin, a few examples of consequences that have worked?
Tons. I had a boy that came to me, and he was an ADHD boy, very impulsive, and the issue was disrespect. He was, you know, saying nasty things to his mother, and of course, you know, she would go into her hurt feelings. And there was a part of him that had a lot of power because he could get his mother to react. Well, this was a boy who loved his Xbox 360. And so the ability to play the Xbox 360 on one day was related to whether or not on the previous day he had treated his mother with respect. Did he treat mom with respect? That's a positive. That's not a negative. He treated mom with respect. Great. He gets an hour and a half on the Xbox. Right. And if he did, and if he treated her with disrespect, she actually went to a therapist and started working on her own issues so that she didn't react to him. So this is a case where you use the video game, the cyber universe, as a reward for desired behaviors.
Talk to us, if you will, about single moms and tough love.
Well, I get a lot of single moms that come and see me. And, of course, usually they're bringing me their sons, probably 80%, 75, 80% of the time. And it's really hard if you're a working mother and you've got, let's say you've got an ADHD kid, let's say you've got a kid who's playing video games excessively. It's a lot easier to just let your kid play video games than it is to have these negative, often unpleasant interactions. So if you're a single mom, especially if you've got a kid with some of these issues, I think it's really important that you get plugged into the community. Maybe there's a man at church who could help you with your son. Maybe there's a man in the community. Maybe you have a Boys and Girls Club near you. I live in Bloomfield Township. There's a Boys and Girls Club 7 minutes from me. It's incredibly crucial that you get your child plugged in to positive role models who can help you raise your child. Don't try to do it on your own. Just like I say to addicts, get support, reach out. If you're a single mom, reach out, get support.
Last question, Kevin Roberts. What advice would you give our young listeners tonight?
I think that today's young people are, by and large, really plugged into the cyber universe. And I think the cyber universe is wonderful. I have a Facebook page. I have a cell phone. I text. But I also think there is great adventure, great excitement to be had in the world apart from video games. And I think that as we move towards a greater dependency on electronics, get out there and experience some real world adventure. Go play paintball. Take your bike. Go explore in your neighborhood. Do something. Do something with real people and have some real adventure in the world rather than sitting in front of your computer screen all day.
Kevin Roberts, your mom's got to be very proud of you. You have learned and you live her lesson of forget yourself and help others. Keep it up.
Thanks, Jack.
Our guest next Sunday will be the all-time winningest coach in NFL history with 347 wins, Coach Don Shula. And now we eat at his steakhouses. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.